Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Coach Karen Scott. I'm looking forward to sharing today regarding a health and wellness tip, as well as doing chapter one of our book club read. We're starting chapter one, which we will cover at that time. So we will be starting very shortly. So bear with me one moment, Coach.
Yeah. I swear we all in good health. Don't eat no food off the shelf. I get it fresh off the vine, fresh from the root alkaline. Get the cabbage, then I shine. Get my morning exercise, I swear. We all in good health over here. We all in good health over here. What? We all in good health over here. Over here.
Again, this is Blog Talk Radio with your host, Coach Karen Scott. Tonight, we will be doing a health and wellness tip regarding the best spices to use for digestion. Then we will go into our book read, The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel. We are starting with chapter one, but I'll review a little bit of what we discussed prior just to kind of bring anyone who needs to be brought up to speed. And so now we'll just go ahead and get started. Again, this is host Coach Karen Scott on Blog Talk Radio. Some of the best spices for digestion. Number one, ginger. What ginger has is phenolic compounds, which are known to relieve gastrointestinal irritation. It also stimulates saliva and bile production. Ginger reduces intestinal contractions by relaxing the intestinal muscles and allowing digested food to pass more easily. In fact, it reduces cramping of the stomach and bowels and may even help with menstrual cramping. Ginger is good for reducing gas and bloating and is famous for addressing other gastrointestinal distress such as nausea due to morning sickness and chemotherapy. Unlike Dramamine, ginger can stop your nausea without making you sleepy. The Zingiberaceae botanical family, to which ginger is a part of, it also includes turmeric, cardamom, which are both incredibly healthy spices within themselves. How can you use ginger for better digestion? You can add it to warm soups. Many people drink ginger tea in the morning to wake up their sluggish digestion. Sometimes you can add it to water, tea, or even hot water with lemon to help settle down after too much food, or simply for a refreshing cleansing drink. It can also be used as the dry spice in smoothies and juices by using fresh ginger root. So please note, though, that ginger does have a blood-thinning action, so it should be used with caution by those taking blood-thinning medication. You also may want to avoid ginger 2 weeks prior to a surgery and then another week after your surgery, and maybe even check with your doctor. The second one is coriander seeds and cilantro. Coriander seeds, which yield cilantro, have been used for thousands of years to help with digestion. Both coriander seeds and cilantro are healthy, but the seeds contain more health benefits for digestion. Coriander has carminative properties, which mean it helps with gas. It's also known to have anti-spasmodic and stomach properties. It calms intestinal spasms that can lead to diarrhea, so it may be helpful to some people who have irritable bowel syndrome. Coriander can also help settle indigestion. As an added benefit, vital chemicals, which are super antioxidant. It also is used to lower blood sugar and potentially a cholesterol lowering benefit is involved as well. Ways to use coriander is in stews, pickled dishes, marinade. Some people add it to soups and smoothies. Some people use it as a rub on their meats. It's wonderful in hot and spicy dishes because of its cooling effect. You chop a little bit up and throw it into whatever dish you're cooking, and it encourages the production of supportive digestive enzymes that can break down your food. The third one, cardamom, that is also part of the ginger family. So no wonder it's helpful for your digestion. It's been used in Chinese, and I can never say this word, but I'm going to give it a try, Ayurvedic medicine for centuries, but is also backed by science as having actions to help relieve bloating and gas. It also has antispasmodic properties, as it can slow the rate of stomach muscle cramping. Cardamom also stimulates the appetite along with easing gas, nausea, indigestion, and cramping. It helps to kill off any foodborne bacteria in the digestive tract, thus helping to protect against food poisoning and gastric distress. Cardamom is used in sweet and savory dishes. It can be prepared as a delicious warming tea by placing 4 cardamom pods in 2 cups of water and simmer for 30 minutes. Sweeten with stevia or whatever your sweetener is that you use if desired. It also can be chewed on to relieve tooth and gum pain as well as preventing infections. Number 4, fennel seeds. Fennel stimulates the production of gastric juices and is another great spice having carminative properties. It's also used as an after-dinner digestive aid. It also has anti-spasmodic properties. Fennel seeds are very rich, is a very rich source of dietary fiber as well. It helps to ease constipation. Its fiber helps protect your colon. Fennel also contains a variety of antioxidants such as quercetin, which is thought to offer protect from aging and diseases, also including cancer. Ways to use fennel seeds for better digestion is add a few pinches of these slightly cooked seeds to any of your dishes. It really works. It reduces bloating and gas when you heat seeds on low in a skillet with some sea salt. And then we have a few remaining other spices that can help digestion, and that would be turmeric. This Indian spice aids digestion while soothing your digestive tract. It has been found to help relieve heartburn, reduce stomach pain due to its anti-inflammatory and antibacterial compounds. It also reduces flatulence and more. The next one is cumin. Cumin is also another great spice for digestion, and it's great for heartburn. Lemon balm. That is a digestive spice that is great for anti-inflammatory and digest. Garlic. It protects against gut immunity. Fenugreek acts as a natural digestive and helps flush out toxins from the body. And lastly, cinnamon bark. When you warm cinnamon bark, it helps and is most likely a useful remedy for sluggish digestion. The German Commission E recommends it for loss of appetite, dyspeptic complaints, bloating, and flatulence. There are also other great spices for digestion. You can always go online and, you know, look at the additional spices that you may want to see that is, in addition to what we spoke about. You also find that a lot of Italian spices are good for digestive support. Go wild and find some new tastes that will also help your tummy and health. When we store these spices, always store them in clean, airtight containers away from the heat and light. Most of the time, you want to keep them in the refrigerator, which will alleviate them boiling so quickly. So that is our health tip regarding the spices that we can use to help with digestion. Quickly open up, and then we'll go into our chapter one, Case for Christ with Lee Strobel or by Lee Strobel. Bear with me. Okie doke. The line is open.
All those are good spices.
All those are good spices, and I think we're not too bad. We use quite a few of them, so we're not too bad.
Because the fennel we have in oil.
No.
Version.
Right. Right. And I understand fennel has like this licorice-y taste. If I'm
not
mistaken.
Yeah, that's the black licorice.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Didn't know that it was good for you like that. Mm-hmm.
Ew.
Exactly. Yeah. That was my mom's favorite. Black licorice and black jelly beans.
I know.
She was on point with that. You give her anything, oh, she can get that black licorice and jelly beans, she was okay with that. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, one more. Go ahead.
Oh, I was done.
Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and get started with chapter one of The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel. Bear with me. As you know, over the last week or so, we were talking about our book club read, which is The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel. We really spent the last couple of weeks talking about the introduction. I'm not going to go into full detail about the introduction, but basically what Lee Strobel is trying to connect or parallel with the case for Christ is to not judge without doing further research, you know, not look at an individual and just automatically think that, you know, they're the one who did it or they're the one that's guilty of doing something. He did an article for an individual who was found guilty for shooting a cop. And once new evidence and research came about, the tables turned and the individual was not guilty. So what that means is we can come to conclusions based on the weight of the facts or prejudices. We have to be open-minded when it comes to researching. You have to delve a little deeper than you may want to. But just be sure that when you do, you have all the facts. And that's basically what he was saying. So part one, examining the record, the eyewitness evidence. Can the biographies of Jesus be trusted? When I first met shy and soft-spoken Leo Carter, he was a 17-year-old veteran of Chicago's grittiest neighborhood. His testimony had put three killers in prison, and he was still carrying a .38 caliber slug in his skull, a grisly reminder of a horrific saga that began when he witnessed Elijah Baptist gun down a local grocer. Leo and a friend, Leslie Scott, were playing basketball when they saw Elijah, then a 16-year-old delinquent, with 30 arrests on his rap sheet, slay Sam Blue outside his grocery store. Leo had known the grocer since childhood. When we didn't have any food, he'd give us some, Leo explained to me in a quiet voice. So when I went to the hospital and they said he was dead, I knew I had to testify about what I saw. Eyewitness testimony is powerful. One of the most dramatic moments in a trial is when a witness describes in detail the crime that he or she saw and then points confidently toward the defendant as being the perpetrator. Elijah Baptist knew that the only way to avoid prison would to be somehow prevent Leo Carter and Leslie Scott from doing just that. So Elijah and two of his pals went hunting. Soon, they tracked down Leo and Leslie, who were walking down the street with Leo's brother Henry, and they dragged all three at gunpoint to a darkened loading dock nearby. I like you, Elijah's cousin said to Leo, but I've got to do this. With that, he pressed a pistol to the bridge of Leo's nose and yanked the trigger. The gun roared, the bullet penetrated at a slight angle, blinding Leo in his right eye and embedding in his head. When he crumbled to the ground, another shot was fired. This bullet lodging 2 inches from his spine. As Leo watched from his sprawled position, pretending he was dead, he saw his sobbing brother and friend ruthlessly executed at close range. When Elijah and his gang fled, Leo crawled to safety. Somehow, against all odds, Leo Carter lives. The bullet, too precarious to be removed, remained in his skull. Despite searing headaches that strong medications couldn't dull, he became the sole eyewitness against Elijah Baptist and his trial for killing grocer Sam Blue. The jurors believed Leo, and Elijah was sentenced to 80 years in prison. Again, Leo was the only eyewitness to testify against Elijah and his two companions in the slayings of his brother and his friend. And once more, his word was good enough to land the trio in prison for the rest of their lives. Leo Carter is one of my heroes. He made sure justice was served, even though he paid a monumental price for it. Ooh. When I think of eyewitness testimony, even to this day, more than 20 years ago, oh, 20 years later, his face still appears in my mind. Testimony from distant time. Yes, eyewitness testimony can be compelling and convincing when a witness has had ample opportunity to observe a crime, when there's no bias or ulterior motive, when the witness is truthful and fair. The climatic act of pointing out a defendant in a courtroom can be enough to doom that person to prison or worse. An eyewitness testimony is just as crucial in investigating historical matters, even the issue of whether Jesus Christ is the unique Son of God. But what eyewitness accounts do we possess? Do we have the testimony of anyone who personally interacted with Jesus, who listened to his teaching, who saw his miracles, who witnessed his death, and who perhaps even encountered him after his alleged resurrection? Do we have any records from first century journalists who interviewed eyewitnesses, asked tough questions, and faithfully recorded what they scrupulously determined to be true? Equally important, how well would these accounts withstand the scrutiny of skeptics? I knew that just as Leo Carter's testimony clinched the conviction of three brutal murderers, eyewitness accounts from the midst of distant time could help resolve the most important spiritual issue of all. To get solid answers, I arranged to interview the nationally renowned scholar who literally wrote the book on the topic, Dr. Craig Blomberg, author of The Historical Reliability of the Gospels. I knew Blomberg was smart. In fact, even his appearance fit the stereotype. Tall, 6 feet two, and lanky, with short, wavy brown hair, unceremoniously combed forward, a fuzzy beard, thick, rimless glasses. He looked like the type who would have been the valedictorian of his high school. He was a national merit scholar. He was a magna cum laude graduate from a prestigious seminary. He was from Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. But I wanted someone who was more than just intelligent and educated. I was searching for an expert who wouldn't gloss over nuances or blithely dismiss challenges to the records of Christianity. I wanted someone with integrity, someone who has grappled with the most potent critiques of the faith and who speaks authoritatively, but without the kind of sweeping statements that conceal rather than deal with critical issues. I was told Blomberg was exactly what I was looking for, and I flew to Denver wondering if he... Admittedly, I had a few doubts, especially when my research yielded one profoundly disturbing fact that he would probably have preferred and remain hidden. Blomberg still holds out hope that his beloved childhood heroes, the Chicago Cubs, will win the World Series in his lifetime. Frankly, that was enough to make me a bit suspicious of his discernment. We will talk about the first interview, Greg Blomberg, PhD. And then we'll open it up a little here. Greg Blomberg is widely considered to be one of the country's foremost authorities on the biographies of Jesus, which are called the Four Gospels. He received his doctorate in New Testament from Aberdeen University in Scotland, later serving as a senior research fellow at Tyndale House at Cambridge University in England, where he was part of an elite group of international scholars that produced a series of acclaimed works on Jesus. For the last dozen years, he has been a professor of New Testament at the highly respected Denver Seminary. Blomberg's books include Jesus and the Gospels, Interpreting the Parables, How Wide the Divide, and commentaries on the Gospels, Matthew and 1 Corinthians. He also helped edit Volume 6 of Gospel Perspective, which deals at length with the miracles of Jesus, co-authored Introduction to Biblical Interpretation. He contributed chapters on the historicity of the Gospels to the book Reasonable Faith and the award-winning Jesus Under Fire. His memberships include the Society for the Study of the New Testament, Society of Biblical Literature, and the Institute for Biblical Research. As I expected, his office had more than his share of scholarly volumes stacked on the shelf. He was even wearing a tie emblazoned with drawings of his books. However, I quickly noted that his office walls were dominated not by dusty tomes from ancient historians, but by artwork from his young daughters. Their whimsical and colorful depictions of llamas, houses, and flowers weren't haphazardly pinned up as a casual afterthought. They had obviously been treated as prizes, painstakingly matted, carefully framed, and personally autographed by Elizabeth and Rachel themselves. I thought to myself, this man has a heart as well as a brain. Blomberg speaks with the precision of a mathematician. Yes, he taught mathematics too early in his career, carefully measuring each word out of an apparent reluctance to tread even one nuance beyond where the evidence warrants. Exactly what I was looking for. As he settled into a high back chair, cup of coffee in hand, I too sipped some coffee to ward off the Colorado chill. Since I sensed Blomberg was the get to the point kind of guy, I decided to start my interview by cutting to the core of the issue. I witnessed the history. I guess I'm going to go with that and then open it up. I think we can try that. I witnessed the history. Tell me this, I said, an edge of challenge in my voice. Is it really possible to be an intelligent, critically thinking person and so believe that the four Gospels were written by the people whose names have been attached to them? Blomberg set his cup of coffee on the edge of his desk and looked intently at me. The answer is yes, he said, with conviction. He sat back and continued. It's important to acknowledge that, strictly speaking, the Gospels are anonymous, but the uniform testimony of the early church was that Matthew, also known as Levi, the tax collector, and one of the 12 disciples, author of the first Gospel in the New Testament, that John Mark, a companion of Peter, was the author of the gospel we call Mark, and that Luke, known as Paul's beloved physician, wrote both the Gospel of Luke and the Acts of the Apostles. How uniform was the belief that they were the author, I asked. There are no known competitors for these three gospels, he said. Apparently, It was just not in dispute. Even so, I wanted to test the issue further. "Excuse my skepticism," I said, "but would anyone have had a motivation to lie by claiming these people wrote these gospels when they really didn't?" Bloomberg shook his head. "Probably not. Remember, these were unlikely characters," he said, a grin breaking on his face. "Mark and Luke weren't even among the 12 disciples. Matthew was. But as former hated tax collector, he would have been the most infamous character next to Judas Iscariot, who betrayed Jesus. Contrast this with what happened when the fanciful, apocryphal gospels were written much later. People chose the names of well-known and exemplary figures to be their fictitious authors: Philip, Peter, Mary, James. Those names carried a lot lower weight than the names of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. So to answer your question, there would not have been any reason to attribute authorship, to these three less respected people if it weren't true. That sounded logical, but it was obvious that he was conveniently leaving out one of the gospel writers. What about John, I asked. He was extremely prominent, in fact. He wasn't just one of the 12 disciples, but one of Jesus' inner three, along with James and Peter. Yes, he's the one exception. Blomberg conceded with a nod. And interestingly, John is the only gospel about which there is some question about authorship. What exactly is in dispute? The name of the author isn't in doubt. It's certainly John, Blomberg replied. The question is whether it was John the Apostle or a different John. You see, the testimony of a Christian writer named Papias, dated about AD 125, refers to John the Apostle and John the Elder. And it's not clear from the context whether he's talking about one person from two perspectives or two different people. But granted, that exception, the rest of the early testimony is unanimous that it was John the Apostle, the son of Zebedee, who wrote the gospel. And I said in an effort to pin him down further, you're convinced that he did. Yes, I believe the substantial majority of the material goes back to the apostle, he replied. However, if you read the gospel closely, you can see some indication that his concluding verses may have been finalized by an editor. Personally, I have no problem believing that somebody closely associated with John may have functioned in that role, putting the last verses into shape and potentially creating the stylistic uniformity of the entire document. But in any event, he stressed, the gospel is obviously based on eyewitness material, as are the other three gospels. We will continue on in our next book read as we delve into the specifics, because we're still examining the evidence from eyewitness accounts. Bear with me, gonna open up. Okay, lines are open up. As I said, we're just gonna continue with this book read. Maybe as we move further, you know, more people will join us, because I think this is really a good book. And I think that it will also, you know, give us a great account to as to what's going on. You should be all right now.
I think that even though we have the Bible, I do think it's cool to also get other books, like even the ones like he mentioned, because all it does mm-hmm. is further, like, enhance the truth. Like, of course, like, if you believe the Bible, that's great. But I think it's
right.
cool, like, for us as Christians, too, to even dig deeper as well and, like, find, like, you know, because that'd be cool.
Right.
Like, you read the Bible and then there's, like, stuff that is like, oh, hey, yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
Exactly.
I just think it's cool.
Like you said, it confirms and enhances. Mm-hmm. Just confirming and enhances what is the truth. It's just kind of like you said, reiterating
exactly.
And just confirming what's already there. But like it's always nice to have that evidence or eyewitness account of different things that has transpired prior to these writings, and we're only in the beginning. I'm already finding it really fascinating on how this eyewitness account are calm. So again, we will continue, and like I said, next week we'll be delving into the specifics. This Blog Talk Radio platform is going to be on hiatus for a minute because they're going to be updating and adding, I guess, newness to it. But that doesn't stop the book club read. I'll just be sharing it through our conference call number so that we can continue to, you know, follow through with this and see where it's going to take us. And then that will also be recorded. So if anybody needs to hear the recording, it will be recorded, you know, so just really excited about this read and what's next to come and what's to come. So I appreciate everybody joining the call or the show and, you know, just being a part of the book club read. And you know what? I'm just going to proceed on and we're just going to read and just see what happens from there. So truly appreciate the support, and just know that the best is yet to come. If there's nothing else to be said, have an amazing weekend.
Okay.
And thank you
thank
so much.
You.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.